This is The Edge with your hosts, Jonathan Von Tobel.
All right, what's up? We got 2 hours on tap, as we usually do here on The Edge, and I think it's a great 2 hours at that. Linda Cohn's going to be with us momentarily. We'll take a look at the NHL offseason, what's been going on, some teams making some pretty good moves, and maybe some value deep on the futures board right now. Dalen Cuff, ACC Network, will be with us. Talk a little college football at the bottom of this hour. Humans in his usual Thursday spot, and speaking of usual Thursday spots with VSiN hosts, Brendan Gaughan, of course, is going to be with us to discuss what is happening in the NASCAR Cup Series as we are on the verge of a championship race. But let's start with a little NHL. Linda Cohn is with us. Of course, you know her, ESPN Sports Center anchor. Also does SiriusXM Mad Dog Radio. You can also find her work at In the Crease is the name of the show on ESPN Plus. Linda, is there something that you don't do at this point?
Yes, let me add something else. I do a Saturday show with Nick Elberger on SiriusXM NHL Network Radio, 4 to 6 Eastern.
Perfect. That's exactly what we needed to tap into too, because, you know, there's been a lot going on in the NHL offseason, and I think there have been quite a few moves that have made some teams that are pretty deep on the board pretty viable in terms of contending for not only a postseason spot, but potentially a dark horse for a Stanley Cup. But before we get into that, I wanted to ask you, you know, I've been reading reports about the NHL, the potential start of the season. Do we have any idea, any clarity on the target date at the beginning of January for the start of the next season?
I have no inside information, but what I wish the National Hockey League can do, if they can pull it off in time, is make January 1st a day that, if you're not a college football fan, that is a day that the NHL has owned, because it's always been Winter Classic Day, right? Mm-hmm. So if they would start their regular season on January 1st, I think that would be great. Will that happen? Everything I'm reading and seeing, probably not. And what I love about the National Hockey League compared to some other sports who are always in a rush, like, for instance, we're hearing, of course, the NBA may start before Christmas, which I don't understand why. But the fact is the NHL does their due diligence, takes their time making an announcement as big as this. So I expect it would be sometime in January. I'm hoping the first, but it could be the third week in January.
All right, so let's take a look. So right now, if you look at the odds board, if you look at maybe Bet Rivers, for example, the Colorado Avalanche, yeah, your favorite to win the Stanley Cup next season, plus 750. Golden Knights here in Vegas, 8-1. Lightning, 9-1. Not surprising that Vegas has the Golden Knights as the favorite to win it at about 6-1. So let's start with Vegas, because a lot of people do have them at the top, yeah, of the odds board. Alex Pietrangelo comes in, but you got to trade a lot of depth for it. Like, what's the difference there? Is Pietrangelo worth shipping off the depth that they had to get him? Does he make them better?
Yes, he makes them better. And that's why, if you notice, I believe odds on Vegas winning the Cup shifted after that move, mm-hmm, slightly, but it shifted, right? So, in some boards, it was their co-favorites with Colorado Avalanche. I have doubts about the Avalanche. I still worry about their goaltending, okay? This is going to be very important when you're looking at teams to lay some money on, because next season coming up will be a compressed season, meaning there'll be fewer games than 82, and also there'll be a lot of back-to-back games. There will be a lot of 4 days and five nights type of schedule, and you need two quality goaltenders. And that's exactly what the Vegas Golden Knights have, which is why, along with the addition of Pietrangelo, makes a big difference and why they're at the top there. There are a lot of other things. And, you know, and when you look in the East, the bottom line is this, I feel. It's the strength in the goalie tandem that you really have to look at. And that's why I love the Washington Capitals in the East, because that's what I think they have with the addition of Henrik Lundqvist, an experienced netminder, obviously 15 years with the New York Rangers, now a Washington Capital. In some respects, many people think backing up the youngster, Samsonov, but I believe that's going to be a 50-50 situation there. So we can get more into that, John. I have my thoughts on dark horses and long shots, but look at that goalie tandem as a key to whether a team raises the Stanley Cup at the end of the year next year.
That's actually really, it's a jumping off point to one of the teams I wanted to talk to you about. It was a little further down the list, but we'll talk about it because it's a smooth transition. Like Edmonton, for example, I thought they added like some quality depth, right? They were a little top heavy in terms of the scoring, but they didn't really go after like a secondary goaltender, right? Like that was kind of the surprise for them in the offseason. They're about 25-1 to win the Stanley Cup, but if they don't have a quality backup goaltender or quality goaltending period, it's going to hold them back, no?
Absolutely. And on that, the hockey show I do on SiriusXM NHL Network Radio, 3 weeks ago, we had, right after free agency, the GM of the Edmonton Oilers, Ken Holland, on the show. And that was the first question, one of the first questions I asked him. And he said, listen, Linda, we were in the mix to get some of the big names like the Jacob Markstrom. You know, he was obviously at the top of the board. Calgary went with him, but they couldn't do it. They fell short. Maybe they were a little late to the party and lost out. So that is the big issue. And with all that talent, it's hard to bet. I know. And it's such a tempting pick at 25-1 when you have Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl there. And those extra pieces you mentioned, they did very well in free agency for every position except the goaltender. I'm concerned about Koskinen, of course, and I'm definitely concerned about Mike Smith, who is just getting older and not better there. So I don't know. I'm really gun shy when it comes to the Edmonton Oilers there. That was a big miss in free agency.
Yeah, at least you want a little bit more than about 25-1, I would think, on a team the way that they're constructed right now. So when you look at the odds, Linda, the one thing that sticks out to me, at least, is you have three teams that are sitting in single digits, right? The Avalanche, Golden Knights, Lightning, depending on the operator, you know, whatever order that they're in. But then there is somewhat of a gap, right? You get to the Bruins, who are at 13, 14, 15-1, depending on where you look. Does that seem like it's kind of like a weird tier system, right? Where you have like the top three teams according to the odds, and then you have the other group of teams like the Bruins, Flyers, Maple Leafs, Blues, kind of all jumbled together. Is that kind of how the NHL is sorted in your mind? Three teams who are true contenders, and then a bunch who have a very good shot but are on the same level with one another?
Yeah, there's a lot of uncertainty out there. That's, to me, that's what this says about the next season and how different it's going to look from a normal NHL regular season and on to the playoffs. We still don't know what, forget the regular season, we still don't know what the postseason and the makeup of the postseason is going to look at, right? So those are safe. Those are why we have it, because those are like no-brainers, right, with those single-digit odds. They're no-brainers. There's so much talent on those three teams. But then there's a lot of, you know, intangibles. Even with the Bruins, with all their talent, I'm not a big fan of Tuukka Rask. I still don't know if Tuukka Rask is going to be there to finish the season for the Boston Bruins, considering he pulled out of a playoff game 90 minutes before the drop of the puck. You know, these kind of things don't disappear and dissipate from a locker room regarding that. They have tremendous talent. I get it. But I really do like, you know, I think the Capitals at 16-1. There's just still so much talent there. By the way, again, don't underestimate the power of a coach in the National Hockey League. Peter Laviolette, first year with the Washington Capitals coming up, all he does is win. All he does is get his teams to the final. You know, something about Washington I'm really looking at. And, you know, the Rangers are a long shot at 25-1, but they're right there with a bunch at 25-1. The Islanders are 25-1. The Carolina Hurricanes are 25-1. You know, of those three teams I just mentioned, I think the Rangers right now are more balanced when it comes to teams out east with those odds. But I'm really not surprised, John, regarding, you know, those easy kind of no-brainers at the top with everyone else, including like a Vancouver and Calgary, you know, ready to make that next step. I believe in Vancouver making that next step more than Calgary, even with the pickup of Jacob Markstrom. Vancouver showed us a lot last year. And that goalie, if you remember, Thatcher Demko, not only has a great name, but he's the real deal. And so they brought in Braden Holtby as well. And that's another terrific goalie tandem you should be watching.
So, you know, it's funny. So Vancouver, a couple of the teams that I noted that I specifically wanted to talk to you about, the loss of guys like Tyler Toffoli, Jacob Markstrom, like is that something they can overcome with the makeup of the overall team?
I really do. I really feel they can. They're well coached. They have great depth. Even without those guys, they're going to be right there in the conversation. And as we all know with the National Hockey League, the postseason is a different animal. All you have to do is get in and get hot. Look at the Dallas Stars, really. You know, they almost came close to pulling off a huge upset there just because intangible heroes, people we never expected, you know, like Anton Khudobin, the 34-year-old goaltender, you know, who played well. So that's why I think if you can stick around, get in, you're going to make adjustments throughout the year, remember, you know, come trading deadline and all of that. No, I mean, Vancouver is in it to win it. They took a big step with their young core, got great experience in the postseason last year, really got through some battle-tested playoff games and experienced what that was like for that young core. That meant a lot. Plus, they have a nice sprinkle of veteran leadership. So I do believe they can surpass and deal with those voids that had to go elsewhere.
All right, two more teams I want to throw at you in terms of potential dark horses, and then we'll get yours, and maybe we'll hit on them. Linda, when I look over what the Montreal Canadiens did and what they already have, this team is like in the range of 60-1 in some spots to win a Stanley Cup. Kids like Nick Suzuki is a really good young core to build around. They get Tyler Toffoli that we're talking about. What am I missing with Montreal? 60-1 seems pretty long with a team the way this is constructed.
Yeah, it's just the fact that Montreal, when was the last time it was so long, right? Since they won the Cup early 90s. And, always things happen. I don't know. I think there's a reason why they're 60-1. I do like some of their moves of bringing Anderson in from Columbus, even though I was a big fan of Max Domi going to Columbus. But I don't know. I know they have Carey Price, arguably the best goaltender. But there's just still not enough scoring for me. You know, Tyler Toffoli is a nice addition. But they don't, if they would have went out and got Taylor Hall, then we have a conversation here, John, but it was the Buffalo Sabres that got Taylor Hall. And they're still far away, speaking of long shots, of making up any kind of serious ground there because they have goaltending and defense issues, on the back line for Buffalo. I just don't think Montreal has done enough. They're moving in the right direction. But are they going to win a cup? No way. Not next year.
60-1 to win the Stanley Cup, 30-1 to win the Eastern Conference. Those odds via BetRivers. So what are the some of the teams deeper on the board you think we should keep an eye on here? What you like to what they did in the offseason?
Yeah, I mentioned, how deep do you want to go? I've definitely mentioned like the Rangers at 25-1 because I just love their goaltending situation with their two young goalies, Shesterkin and Georgiev, are for real. We spoke about goalie tandems. The Toronto Maple Leafs, some people might look at, although that's not a real long shot, it's 16-1. They made some nice, moves, but I don't think it's enough. They tire with Freddie Anderson and that for so long. And when you look at some of the other ones, well, let's go deep. Mm-hmm. Nashville didn't do enough at 30-1. Not enough offense for me, sorry. Winnipeg is a kind of interesting pick. And Connor Hellebuck, he has great regular season. They're at 40-1. There could be a trade of Patrick Laine before the season starts. Who really has outlasted his stay at Winnipeg. But as I look down the list, nothing is shocking me. Even past Montreal at 60-1, the Sharks haven't done enough. No. I don't even like their coaching situation there. We talked about Buffalo with Taylor Hall, 80-1. That's not going to move much. Chicago Blackhawks, no. Honestly, John, I hate to be boring here. I don't think we're going to have any. I'm not thrilled with any of these long shots. Blackhawks, 80-1. Kings, 80-1. These are all rebuilding modes. Even Ottawa, 100-1. Matt Murray in net now, former two-time Stanley Cup winner with the Pittsburgh Penguins. It's just not enough. They're still far apart. And no matter what the Red Wings have done, even moving in the right direction, again, with Stevie Eiserman making these moves, they're the ultimate long shot at 200-1. So
we'll get you out of here.
Yeah, I don't feel it. I'm not going to tell you, some way.
Of course. Well, and so here, we'll get you out of here on this end because we mentioned a couple of teams potentially overvalued by the market, right? Colorado could potentially be one of them. Edmonton Oilers could be one of them. Are there any others that maybe you think the market is telling you, we're talking about 15 to 17-ish in that range, but you're like, I see some flaws with this roster. I think I'd want a longer price on a team like this. Any other teams that come out to mind?
Yeah, good question. I look at the St. Louis Blues. I know they signed Torrey Krug, one of the best defensemen. Obviously we know his work with the Bruins. He goes to the Blues. They're at 20-1. I know they won the Cup 2 years ago, but they came out of nowhere to do it. They don't have Alex Pietrangelo anymore. I like a Pietrangelo over a Krug if you're looking at the differences in these defensemen. But the point is this. I was surprised the Blues didn't do more to build around a Torrey Krug as your number one guy in the back line. So I think they're totally, I would have put them lower than 20-1. I would have put them in the 25-1, 30-1 category. I just don't think they have enough to make a serious run.
All right, Linda, we're up against it. I appreciate some time today. And remind us, too, one more time, when you're on with the NHL, SiriusXM NHL, and on Mad Dog as well.
Okay, cool. Thank you. SiriusXM Mad Dog Sports Radio, I'm on Saturday and Sunday mornings, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific time, and on SiriusXM NHL Network Radio, Channel 91. I am on at 4 p.m. Eastern on Saturday, 1 p.m. Pacific. And I'll be back on SportsCenter on ESPN finally in a couple of weeks. Friday, November 6th is when I'm scheduled to do late night sports centers, especially on the weekends. Look for me there. So still part of that, the worldwide leader in sports.
Perfect. Thank you, Linda, very much. It was good to talk to you.
Thanks for having me. Take care.
You too. Again, Linda Cohn, fantastic job with everything that she does. Been a big fan of her work for a while. All right. So it is Thursday, but we got to get a little NHL analysis in there because the season is right around the corner, essentially. Same with the NBA, man. It's nuts the way that sports have been working in this offseason. But of course, Thursday, so it means Thursday night football. A quick update on what is going on with the line. We'll have our detailed analysis of this, of course, a little bit later in the show. But the Carolina Panthers and the Atlanta Falcons will go at it later today. Carolina opens up as a 3-point favorite with a total of 51. As of this morning, got to as low as Carolina just laying 2 in this spot against the Atlanta Falcons. But a fascinating matchup, considering multiple factors, right? But the other, the main one to me, market buying in on Atlanta yet again. But do you trust this defense? Statistically, the worst defense in the National Football League in multiple key categories. We'll have analysis on that and whether or not they can contain a Carolina Panthers team actually within the top 10. But when we return, notable Week 8 line moves. We've got 6 games to look at here. Also breaking news, of course, that will remind you, at least if you do not remember or do not know, about some changes to the NFL schedule for this coming week of action. It's the Edge here at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Plenty here to get to in the National Football League. First up, the breaking news out of the NFL. The dreadful New England Patriots offense getting a little bit worse potentially. Julian Edelman is going to miss time after undergoing a knee procedure. 34-year-old wide receiver underwent the procedure on Thursday. Expected to miss multiple weeks, of course. The Athletic's Jeff Howe first reported. Not sure how long he's going to be out, but it has been an issue for Edelman throughout the entire season, as we know. He's been limited in nearly every Patriots practice. He's played just 61.2% of offensive snaps through 6 games. And so now you look at a Patriots offense that has scuffled already. Look at these healthy wide receivers, right? Damir Bird, Jacoby Myers, Gunnar Olszewski. Those are your healthy wide receivers. Because remember, N'Keal Harry, of course, is dealing with issues too. This is going south very quickly for this New England Patriots team, at least from an offensive standpoint. And N'Keal Harry, of course, held out of practice yesterday too. So this is not going to get better anytime soon, it looks like, for the New England Patriots. They've been messing around with the idea that it was going to be a buy low spot here against the Buffalo Bills. But at some point, man, you have to have some sort of offensive production. And it doesn't look like maybe this is going to be the spot to buy low on the New England Patriots. But we talked about this with Tom Brady, the dynamic with the Patriots, what was going on with this team. What they had done with the skill positions in terms of not really investing is starting to bite them now. There was not a lot of depth. You saw it coming into this season, and now as injuries hit your team, you have been thrashed with it at wide receiver and really nothing, at least in terms of upside, when it comes to the wide receiving core. So again, Julian Edelman, knee procedure. He is not going to play again for the foreseeable future. Some rumblings that he could be out for the rest of the year, but nothing official in terms of being reported. So keep that in mind as we go forward with New England. With that, take a look at some of the games that we have seen line moves here this week in the NFL, and some notable ones at that. And it's about 2 points or more is what we're looking at here for these 6 games. And there's pretty explainable, right, why some of these numbers have moved the way that they have. First up, Titans at Bengals. Tennessee opens up a 3.5-point favorite, now sitting at 5.5. Makes sense for multiple reasons. One, obviously the market, I think, kind of in on this Tennessee team. From an offensive standpoint, a very good team, especially with Ryan Tannehill leading the way. But defensively, has its issues. This number got to 6 in multiple spots. The 5.5s have now started to pop up a little bit more, and it seems like 6 is going to be the ceiling. And in fact, 2 spots on my screen right now sitting on 5. So I think sitting at 6, and it's a number that I bet that the Bengals very, very very, very live catching 6 points, right? Getting within that six themselves, considering how good their offense could be and the fact that the Tennessee Titans rank in the mid-20s in terms of defensive efficiency, always leaving the back door open for a team that's got the offensive talent that the Bengals have. But you can understand why six would be the ceiling and then bringing it back down the market is to 5.5. And especially after these last weeks of games, Tennessee right now up to 17th in defensive efficiency. So there you go. Jets and Chiefs, also one that has moved, and that's not surprising either, right? Moving off of the 21 down to the 19.5. We know the storied history of large spreads and numbers. We saw just last week the Jets stay within that 13 to 10 range. Remember that number even closed 9.5, covered that one. So this is maybe more of a spot where, and you know, we'd have to maybe ask a couple of the bookmakers, but I would assume maybe there'd be more on Kansas City first half, expecting the Chiefs to open up a very big lead and then go to, you know, secondary players, backup quarterbacks, things like that in the second half against the New York Jets, leaving the potential open for a cover at 19.5 or 21 if you got it. But you can understand why you move off of that 21 because it is the National Football League. It's hard to cover numbers like that in a league like this. New Orleans and Chicago, this is fascinating as well. So New Orleans opens up as a 2-point favorite here against the Bears. We're looking at 4.5 across the board, total of 43.5. Really just where this Bears team was, right, in terms of covering numbers and playing a little bit above their head in terms of their record. It all comes crashing down on Monday night. Now a New Orleans team that has been banged up in their own right, especially wide receiver because of COVID issues and Michael Thomas being like punished or not punished, whatever the hell it is. They have their own blemishes, right? But the market believing that the tide has turned for this Bears team to just finally start to play against them, but up from 2 to 4.5 for the New Orleans Saints. Cowboys and Eagles. So it's not surprising that the Eagles up to 7.5, but it looks like it is going to be Ben DiNucci getting the start here for the Cowboys. If you read the tea leaves reports today that Andy Dalton was participating in meetings, but at least in terms of concussion protocol where he's at, it does not look like he will be ready to go this weekend against Philadelphia. This goes from 7.5 to 9.5. The Philadelphia Eagles, a 9.5-point favorite. Think about how bad this team has been, the Eagles, and now you're asking the market to lay 9.5 with them. It's insanity to me. Yes, and I understand it's going to be the DiNucci, but I have never seen anything that would make me want to lay 9.5 with the Philadelphia Eagles. I don't know about you, man. Chargers, Broncos, Chargers from a pick up to a 3-point favorite, and then you get the Steelers and the Ravens. Not surprising here. Again, we talk about like ceilings and floors of numbers. It does look like the floor would be 3.5 here for Baltimore, starting to pop back up here at 3.5, starting to pop back up at 4. So Baltimore originally a 6-point favorite. Wes and I talked about maybe being a buy low spot for the Ravens this coming weekend. Market says 3.5, maybe a little too low, back up to 4. When we come back, though, Thursday night, it is Thursday Night Football, of course. Let's get the analysis and the numbers on the Panthers versus the Falcons and a potential buy low spot here for Carolina. Welcome back in. It's the Edge here at VSiN. It's a reminder, too. It's a big week. Sports Betting Network here is opening up, of course, that brand new studio over at Circa. And starting right now, you can watch every VSiN show for free on VSiN.com all week long. The Edge, Betting Across America, Rush Hour, Gone Racing, Long Shots, all of your favorite VSiN shows, all for free 24/7 on VSiN.com this week. And while you're there, check out our 10-day free subscription to sample everything we have to offer, including the daily best bets email and our Point Spread weekly betting guide. It's a perfect week to get more VSiN from the Sports Betting Network. Head to VSiN.com now to start watching for free. And speaking of your favorite VSiN shows, like The Edge, Long Shots, Rush Hour, and Gone Racing, the guys from Gone Racing are going to be here later today because it's Thursday, right? So Brendan Gaughan is going to be with us. A Brendan Gaughan who I saw with his hair perfectly coiffed the other night. Looks very good. Very good. I tried to match his energy with the hair today, so hopefully he will approve. Anyway, Thursday Night Football. This has been moving quite a bit, man. And right now we're looking at 1.5 across the board for the Carolina Panthers. Total 51.5 here in this matchup on Thursday night. So it looks like the market's buying in again on this Falcons team. You know, I keep asking, though, or at least I keep asking myself, like, is this defense capable of handling Carolina's offense? Because this defense, in multiple statistical categories, is the worst one in the National Football League. Currently 27th, though, in Football Outsiders defensive efficiency rankings. Falcons are giving up 6.6 yards per play worst mark in the NFL. 39.89 yards per drive, 28th in the National Football League. 2.76 points per drive. So we're talking about the 25th worst defense in that regard as well. Go back to their loss against Detroit, right? 6.5 yards per play, 360 or 86 total yards, both of which right in line with what this defense gives up on a regular basis. So it doesn't, like, there's no signs of this defense improving really whatsoever. And again, I've brought this stat up before, and I'll bring this up one last time. If you remember, right, they get the win over the Minnesota Vikings. They drop 40 points, hold them to under 30. But as I had pointed out in that one too, Kirk Cousins kept turning the ball over. He threw three interceptions in the first half. In the second half, when he held onto the ball, they averaged 9 yards per play and 50 yards per drive. So, like, this defense is atrocious. There is no getting around the fact this defense is terrible. And their secondary, right, one of the worst in the National Football League, giving up 8.5 yards per attempt to opposing quarterbacks. That's the worst mark in the NFL. And in their first meeting with the Panthers, you're talking about giving up 6.9 yards per play, 48.5 yards per drive. The Panthers did, all but one of their drives into Falcons territory in that game. And I remember this all very fondly, considering that I had bet on them, the Atlanta Falcons, in that game, gave up, and then, of course, they won in cover against the Vikings. But, like, this is, like, all of these numbers together, I just don't know what this unit defensively is going to do against the 10th most efficient offense in the National Football League, right? Teddy Bridgewater in the first matchup against Atlanta, 27-36, 313 yards, 8.7 per attempt, 2 touchdowns. So, it's just, when you look at this defensively, right, I just do wonder, because there have been quite a few times where the market has bought in Atlanta, and I watch them at times, especially offensively, and think they should be better than they really are, and it has yet to really come to fruition in consecutive games, right? And then you look at this defense from another standpoint, and I think this is weird. It's almost like a statistical anomaly because how bad the secondary is, right? By the way, again, we talk about 32nd, dead last in terms of yards after catch allowed to opposing wide receivers. But where the Falcons actually thrive, and which gives them a chance, I think, in a matchup like this, is up front. Their defensive front ranks 6th in adjusted line yards per carry allowed at 3.67. They are 4th in opponent's power success, 53%. 3rd in percentage of opponent runs stuffed to 26%. So, like, this front 7 has played the run extremely well. Like, statistically, they're a top 10, top 5 run defense in some metrics, too. I do wonder if some of that is your secondary is so bad, opposing offenses don't really try to establish a run that much. And again, you go back to the first matchup between these two teams. Carolina did average 4.6 yards per carry on the ground against the Atlanta Falcons. So again, kind of speaking to the fact that maybe your pass defense is so bad that opposing offenses don't try to exploit anything in terms of a ground game against you. But you would think that if these metrics are true for the Atlanta Falcons, right, being that they're a good front 7 against a run, that a successful game for them covering a number like 3 or 2.5 or 2 or 1.5 where it's at now starts with them bottling up an average Panthers running game. Panthers rank 17th in terms of their rushing attack, top 10 in terms of their overall offensive efficiency. And then there is, of course, the other side of this, right? Like, I've brought this up before with the Carolina Panthers, the worry with them going forward, right? They're a plucky team. They're going to be a pain in the butt for a lot of opponents going down the stretch here. They are the 23rd ranked defense in the National Football League if you look at efficiency metrics. So that is going to be something that holds them back to a certain extent, right? If you are not great defensively, of course, then that is going to be something that works against you. Carolina ranks in the bottom mid-20s in a lot of key categories as well, especially against the run, 4.9 yards per carry, something that this team does not do very well. If you're looking at certain things too, like total yards, opponent yards per play for the Carolina Panthers. Carolina right now, if you're looking at it, giving up about 5.6, 5.7 yards per play. So again, pretty average to below average for this team. So overall, you see what the Falcons bring on offense, and you're like, well, I get how bad the defense is for the Falcons, but at the same time, shouldn't their offense be able to exploit, right, a below average to poor defense in Carolina? And I would say, yes, here's the problem. In terms of offensive efficiency, the Atlanta Falcons are still in the bottom half of the league. And like, that's been the weird thing about this Falcons team when you look at them from that standpoint, right? We're talking about a Falcons team right now that is 23rd in offensive efficiency. An Atlanta Falcons team that is 18th in terms of their passing attack, 30th in terms of their rushing attack, in terms of efficiency metrics, right? The DVOA numbers that we always talk about. And so that's, to me at least, my worry here. I have a Falcons defense defense, especially specifically a secondary that is bottom half of the league, if not dead last in a lot of key categories. I have an offense that is well into the bottom half of the league, especially in when it comes to their rushing attack, right? 30th in the NFL. But the market is in, man, like driving this down from 3 down to 1.5, which is also surprising considering how much the market was in on the Panthers for quite a while, right? Especially over that 4-game stretch where they had won 3 out of 4 games and, you know, taken games against the Chargers, the Cardinals. And so now, like, to me, as I'm analyzing this, I would think 1.5 is like the floor here for the Panthers in this number. We will see, because the market has been pretty strong in Atlanta. In the spots it hit has been Atlanta, right? They've been strong. Week 1. Right, flipped the favorite. It was a massive move, but from like 1.5, 2 for the Seahawks to 1, right? Driving that number down for the Dallas Cowboys from 7.5 all the way down to 3. And that one, by the way, was right. But I'm using that as an example to show you, right, that the market is really strong on this. And you see some of the injuries too, probably paying a part of this, the fact that Russell Okung could be out. He is doubtful for this one. Guys, keep an eye on John Miller, Zach Kerr, Efe Obada, and then of course Marquise Haynes for the Carolina Panthers. Tack McKinley is not going to play for the Atlanta Falcons, but to me, like everything I'm looking at here, 1.5, it seems like a buy low spot and a time to get in on the Carolina Panthers on Thursday night. All right, when we come back, we're going to have a lot to get to in the ACC. And remember, in the second hour, Matt Youmans is going to be with us, too, to go over everything, his thoughts, both NFL and college. And you know what? We'll do it because guess what? It's my show. I'm sorry, but there is maybe some stuff there. NBA MVP.
Yes.
You know it. Now is the perfect time to start betting on soccer. And with BetRivers Sportsbook, you can get $100 in free bets when you deposit $50 using the promo code EPL100. Again, that's promo code EPL100. As always, you can get great customer service and only a one-time playthrough at BetRivers, your hometown sportsbook. First-time depositors and new users only. Got to be 21, playable in Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. If you have a gambling problem, 1-800-GAMBLER. Indiana, 1-800-9 with it. In Colorado, 1-800-522-4700. Playable in New Jersey as Play Sugar House. All right. Let's head out and welcome in Dallin Cuff, broadcaster for the ACC Network. Dallin, appreciate the time, man. My producer, though, I want to start with this, tells me that you are quite the Steelers supporter. Give us the read, because this number has gone from Baltimore -6 to as low as -3.5. Do they maintain the streak here?
I think they will. I saw it was 6. My brother and I, born and raised in the Berg, he sent me that text. It must have been Monday morning or something. He said, it's a 6-point spread right now. I can't bet them because I can't emotionally and financially be at risk. So I always stay away from them. But when I saw it was 6, I thought it was shocking. He said the same thing I thought. 3.5 should be the number. And it seems like it's heading that way. So if you got them at 6 or 5 or even 4, then you should be good. I think this ends up being a 3-4-point game. Either way, so either group can win. I was shocked that the Steelers were laying 6 going into that game.
Speaking of shocked, I'm shocked, Dallin. No, of course, but I'm shocked that this is not the primetime game. We have to suffer through an NFC East matchup between the Eagles and the Cowboys and Ben DiNucci. But
brutal, man.
I guess we'll complain about that later. All right, let's talk about the ACC first off. And like, I don't really need like a lot of analysis on this. I feel like I just want to complain for a second. Quinn Ewers, okay. So number one ranked prospect overall, 2022 class, decommitted from Texas, and of course immediately the names considered Ohio State, Alabama, Clemson. Like, we're gonna go from like Deshaun Watson to Trevor Lawrence to now Quinn Ewers for Clemson. This is getting ridiculous.
Yeah, I think this is the new paradigm. So I'm sorry, man. I mean, it's pretty much those three schools are gonna be, it's just the rich have gotten richer, and they've separated on a level right now that it's pretty crazy when you watch them play. It's just and it's not just the ones, it's the twos and the threes. I mean, the guys that are like the third string guys on Clemson and Bama and Ohio State could start at almost every program in the country. And that's the problem, especially in this situation we're at with COVID, where, you know, it hasn't happened to one of those three teams. I mean, Ohio State just started, but it hasn't happened yet where it's taken out large swaths of their squad. But if something happens like that happened to Virginia Tech, happens to Clemson, they could sustain it outside of Lawrence. Even if ETN goes down, their backup backs aren't great, but they can survive in some regards, thrive at their different positions. So it's just a case of the rich get richer in college football right now, and that gap is just keeps growing, it seems.
So when you make what do you make of their opponent? Not so much the matchup here, right? Clemson's a 31-point favorite, the total sitting at 61. But I've been really pleasantly surprised by Boston College, and specifically this passing attack. Like, it's a really up-tempo attack. It's worked out really well. Their running game finally showed up last week against Georgia Tech. But what have you made of Boston College up to this point?
You just said it there. They're going to have to run the ball like they did against Georgia Tech. You have to keep Trevor Lawrence and those guys off the field a bit. And I know, you know, Phil Dracovic has been really good, the transfer from Notre Dame under center. And Coach Apley in his first year, they're throwing her all over the yard. I mean, this is way different than Steve Adazio's crew the last few years. But the problem when you're playing Clemson is you got to stay on the field. You got to be able to possess the ball a bit. And now James Skalski's out. He's injured. They're like leader middle linebacker for Clemson, which is important. They've got a couple other injury niggles going on there. That 31, though, it seems scary to me just because I really don't trust BC to go on the road and it all change the way they play. So if they're going to keep trying to play it and throw it all over the yard, you're going to have to keep up with Clemson. I don't think they can do that. And I think we could look at a situation where this could be a 35-40 point game.
Did you think last week was more of like a kind of a sleepwalk thing? Like, hey, you know, we'll make it through this game. It's fine. I know Dabo wasn't happy after the game with the questions he was getting, but they did look like a little stuck in neutral to start that one.
They did. And I mean, we made a big deal of it because I mean, 48 points is the spread. I mean, that's fodder in itself. So we talked quite a bit about that against Syracuse. But Hughes played one of their better games, and it was all three phases. I mean, they're getting pick sixes, which Trevor Lawrence never does. They got a blocked punt and scored, which doesn't really happen very often to Clemson. We had a blocked field goal earlier in the year, but usually they're good in all three phases. They did struggle in that game, but I think that serves as the wake-up call. I think that was the game to be like, all right, guys, we know we throttled Georgia Tech 73-7. We thought we were going to walk over Hughes. We didn't do that. Let's get back to who we are. We're playing at home again. We've got a BC team coming in that plays differently than years past. So don't think you got to be kind of be on your game. Let's go right in and attack them. And I think you're going to end up with a game that's lopsided from the jump.
Well, and now, of course, it's a spot for them because they have Notre Dame coming up next week. And so we could talk about the Irish, too, because it seemed like the Irish had their little speed bump against Louisville a couple weeks ago in a low-scoring game. Now they get a Georgia Tech team that I think the big picture has some upside down, but we don't know about this season so far because the turnovers have been an issue. Notre Dame is a favorite by 20 points with a total of 57. Do the Irish overlook Georgia Tech this weekend?
I don't think they do. I think they're trying to build, and Brian Kelly said it in his press conference afterwards, he says, we're not looking ahead, but we know we had to be better than we had been to this point in time. Because Louisville, they did not play well. Bear in mind the season opener against Duke. They were really, really bad against the Duke team. Their offense in general has been kind of been neutral. I know they hung 52 on South Florida, but that offense never looked good. It was mostly because their defense put them in great positions, special teams. This group has to continue to build momentum to that Clemson game. They have to go in with urgency in this game to really work on their offense. And hopefully, you know, Mayer, their tight end, who had a good game last game, they can keep him going. Kyren Williams can get going again on the ground. Their offense has to be better if they're actually not going to beat Clemson, but compete with Clemson in their building on November 7th. So I think this game is a game they don't overlook Georgia Tech at all. Tech's a team that's really struggled defensively. You mentioned the turnovers has a lot of times put their defense in really bad spots, but they're giving up 41 and change a game. That's worse than the ACC. Conversely, Notre Dame's defense has been the best in the league, giving up sub 10 a game. They dominate the line of scrimmage at times. I mean, the 20 points was a little concerning because again, that offense has not shown me enough outside of last week's explosion. Mm-hmm. But I think they can find a way. I can't blame LA. I would argue laying 31 for Clemson and 20 for Notre Dame. Granted, it's not my money going on this. Maybe I wouldn't do that. But I do think the under at 57 is a better play. What I saw, the under is probably better. I can't believe I'm saying that either with a college game right now. But I really don't think Georgia Tech's gonna be able to move the ball that well on that defense. Conversely, I don't think Notre Dame's gonna hang 50 on anybody or 40 on this Georgia Tech team. So I think you're looking at a game that's like 30-10, 30-14. And I think the under is probably the best play in that matchup.
So the programs can't look ahead. We can. Well, the game of the year line was Notre Dame catching 7.5 against Clemson. Does that sound fair to you?
No, honestly, I think I would love Clemson. I would love to lay 7.5 at Clemson in that game. I think Notre Dame, based on brand and their name value, and their rankings always reflect it, and sometimes the number reflects it too in terms of the spread. It's just people recognize them. They expect a certain something from them. This team's just not. I'm not sold on this team. I don't think they're the best team, second best team in the conference. Forget, you know, one of the top five teams in the nation. So I would love to just to lay 7.5 for Clemson and go into that game. I think that's a great number for them. I think they win by double digits and rather handily. I mean, the biggest issue with Notre Dame is the team speed. Do they have team speed to compete with with Clemson. They were able to compete with Louisville, but not dominate Louisville. And Louisville's got a lot of speed, but doesn't have a lot of execution. Has some issues defensively. They got some issues. Clemson's got the team speed, the execution. They've got the defensive side of the ball. They've got the coaching, the experience. They got it all. So you got to bring it. And I really would be surprised if that's not a double-digit win for Clemson. Also, obviously, Notre Dame, they got some fans in there, but it's not a packed house. You're not walking into a crazy environment to play a road game in, and I don't think they're going to be. They're definitely not scared at all to play in these big games. I mean, Clemson knows what it's all about, and this is very rarely they even get tested during the regular season. So I'm sure they're going to be up and excited to have this challenge to go play at Notre Dame. It's a cool, just lifetime experience. Mm-hmm. They'll be ready to go, and I think that's a double-digit game.
All right, let's take a look at the last game, at least in terms of the time, 5 p.m. Pacific time, North Carolina and Virginia. So Virginia on this four-game slide here, North Carolina, 7-point favorite on the road with a total of 61.5. But we have seen the Tar Heels kind of scuffle, I guess what we'll call lesser competition. What do you make of this matchup here with North Carolina?
Yeah, I think that Florida State loss really kind of opened those guys' eyes. This is the same core group that was there last year. And the problem with that group is that was Mac Brown's first year, and they're trying to figure out how to win games, but they really struggled with consistency. They had great fourth quarter comebacks and some great second half performances. That same kind of thing is carried over this year. A lot of inconsistency, but they were still winning the games they were supposed to win until they went to Tallahassee. And they almost pulled that one out. They didn't have a couple drops late. We'd probably be looking at them differently, and this number wouldn't be as good to me as it is. If I'm laying 7 going on the road to UVA, UVA is a team that lost 4 straight. They really had struggled to just get the ball downfield. Now, Brennan Armstrong, their quarterback, suffered a concussion a couple weeks ago. He played at Miami. They lost 19-14 last week. He will play this game. He makes them better, but they're still last in the conference in terms of just pass attempt per yard. They're only throwing the ball about 5 yards per attempt. They're struggling to get separation by anybody on the outside. Armstrong is trying. He'll try. He can do it with his feet a little bit too. But overall, I think this team offensively is not able to keep up with UNC. And UNC has – it's not just Daz Newsome and Bo Corrales, who was out last game but supposedly will be playing this week as wideouts. Michael Carter and Javonte Williams, the running backs, have been a dynamic, as anybody in the country, 1-2 threat in the backfield. I mean, these guys are catching balls in the backfield. They're runners. They're great in space, but they also can run up between the tackles. I like the fact that laying 7 for Carolina, I know it's a road game. I think they also will be concerned about putting together consistent performances, and I think that Florida State game has opened their eyes. They responded really well. They played a rivalry game last week, and it wasn't even close to the mean. It was a 27-point game, 26-point game. It felt like a 40-point game. I mean, it never felt close, and that's a rival on their and a huge game in that region. They just blew them out. I think that's what we're going to see more from UNC, is a consistency and an attention to detail. So when they go on the road at UVA, I feel good about them laying 7 points.
Dallin Cuff, broadcaster for the ACC Network. Dallin, we appreciate some time. We're up against it, but thank you very much, sir. Great spot.
Anytime, guys. Have a good one.
You too. All right. We got the second hour right around the corner. Matt Eumanns is going to be with us, host, of course, of My Guys in the Desert. We will get his thoughts on the upcoming weekend, of course, in the National Football League and in college football. We also have a lot to get to in college football, too. We can overlook the SEC, where we're at with some of these numbers and these line moves. Quick look at the NBA MVP odds. We've been posted at a couple of shops as well this last weekend. And, of course, NASCAR Cup Series preview with Brendan Gaughan. You can get in touch with the show on social media, at me, JVT, up on Twitter. Always welcome with constructive criticism. Some people aren't feeling the metrics. I think I'll list like 10 off in a row in the B block in the next hour. What do you think? Just like rattle off numbers left and right for no reason whatsoever. All right, Eumanns is going to be with us. We got to get his thoughts on a couple of these. First, the Thursday night game, because the belief in Atlanta has burned the market quite a few times. We'll see why that has moved in that direction. See if COVID's going to affect some of these other games, especially that Las Vegas-Cleveland game. Four from a number perspective, though, is Cleveland under a 3-point favorite, now sitting at 2.5 with a total of 51.